We'll be in John chapter 21 today. Well, I recently came across a book that has been a great encouragement to me. The title of the book is The Imperfect Pastor by Dr. Zach Eswine. And he talks about how God uses imperfect people to accomplish his purposes. And one of the people that he talks about is the Apostle Peter. So this morning, I want to share with you some of the things that I've been learning from Dr. Eswine and from thinking about Peter and his relationship with Jesus. Because I think this can have a great impact on how all of us imperfect people live in relationship to him. So I want to take you through maybe some things that will draw to mind your own spiritual journey. And that will be different for each one of us. For me, I grew up as a kid going to church. And I went to church every week, so I especially remember going to church on Easter Sundays and learning about Jesus from a very early age. And then one day, I think when I was around 15 years old, I remember all the things that I had been learning throughout my life sort of coming together. And the gospel made sense. And I gave my life to Jesus. I had heard it all before. I had heard that Jesus died on the cross, that he died for my sins, that he rose from the dead. But that day, it all just made sense to me personally. That having risen from the dead, Jesus was alive. And that meant that I could have a personal relationship with him. And it was very simple in those days. I was a 15-year-old kid who loved reading the Bible and learning about God, getting to know him better. It was long before I ever got up and spoke for Jesus, long before I was a pastor, long before I even thought about ever possibly being a pastor. There were no expectations in terms of what I would do for Jesus. I just knew that he loved me. And I was growing to love him. It was a personal relationship. So this morning I want to ask if you know him personally. Do you have a personal relationship with Jesus? If so, do you remember when you first met him? In John chapter 21, Jesus will take us back to the very beginning of our faith journey because he takes Peter back to the very beginning of his faith journey. So I want you to remember who you were when you first met Jesus. And if you're here today and you don't know him personally, you haven't met him yet in that personal way, then you're going to see how he worked very personally in the life of the Apostle Peter and brought him back into a relationship with God. So I hope that this look at this inside view of Jesus and Peter will be an invitation for you also to follow the risen Lord. So wherever you are in your faith journey, find yourself in the story of Jesus and Peter in John chapter 21. By the time we get to John 21, Jesus has risen from the dead, and he's appeared to his disciples a couple of times, but there's still a lot of confusion. And John 21 starts with these words. After this, Jesus revealed himself again to the disciples by the Sea of Tiberias. And he revealed himself in this way. Now, those last three words are really important. When it says he revealed himself in this way, Jesus is intentionally revealing himself to the disciples, but especially to Peter. It's really the key to understanding John chapter 21, that Jesus is intentionally revealing himself. Peter had just failed Jesus very profoundly, and he had gone back to fishing. Verse 3 says, Simon Peter said to them, I am going fishing. See, that's the one thing he knew he could still do. He may not have followed Jesus very well, and he may have failed in his leadership role amongst the disciples, but he knew he could fish. And the other disciples went with him, and they fished all night. But that night, they caught nothing. Now, depending on how familiar you are with the Bible, you may or may not know that this is a flashback to when Peter first met Jesus. It was about 3 years earlier. The first meeting also happened after a long night of fishing and catching nothing. On that first occasion, Peter, who was called Simon at the time, and some of the other disciples were on the shores after the night of fishing, and they were cleaning their nets when they met Jesus. Here's what happened. While they were cleaning their nets, Jesus said to Simon, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch. And Simon answered, Master, we have toiled all night and took nothing. But at your word, I will let down the nets. And when they had done this, they enclosed a large number of fish, and their nets were breaking. And then Simon Peter fell down on his knees before Jesus and said, depart from me, for I am a sinful man, O Lord. So Jesus had revealed himself in this miraculous catch of fish, and Simon Peter said, Lord, I'm a sinner. I am a sinner. I can't be around you. Go away from me. Do you remember when you first met Jesus? When he first revealed himself to you? When you first realized that you were a sinner? And you couldn't possibly be in a relationship with a holy and perfect God because he's holy and you're not. Do you remember a time like that? Now, 3 years later, after Jesus' death and resurrection, he is intentionally revealing himself to Peter by recreating this scene that took place when they first met. It's nearly 3 years later. The disciples have once again fished all night and caught nothing. And it says, just as day was breaking, Jesus stood on the shore, yet the disciples did not know that it was Jesus. He's risen. He's in a glorified body. He's not recognized by them for some reason. And remember, he is revealing himself to them. Jesus said to them, children, do you have any fish? And they answered him, no. See, everything that happens in this chapter is reminding Peter of what had happened 3 years earlier. It's reminding him of this journey of faith that he's been on. So just as happened the first time, Jesus is standing on the shore, and he's giving them instructions. This time he says, cast the net on the right side of the boat, and you will find some. So they cast it, and now they were not able to haul it in because of the quantity of fish. That disciple whom Jesus loved therefore said to Peter, it is the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his outer garment, for he was stripped for work, and threw himself into the sea. Now, this isn't the first time that Peter has thrown himself into the sea, is it? Again, if you're familiar with the Gospels, there was a time when Jesus came walking on the water, and Peter saw him walking on the water, and Peter, full of faith, threw himself into the sea and began walking on the water. But when he saw the winds and the waves and the frightening situation that he had thrown himself into, he took his eyes off of Jesus and he started to sink. Do you remember a time like that in your life? A time when you had great faith and you stepped out for Jesus to do something in faith. But then you started to doubt and you started to grow fearful and you took your eyes off Jesus. Do you remember a time like that? Jesus is reminding Peter of each step of his journey. Verse 9. When they got out on land, they saw a charcoal fire in place with fish laid out on it and bread. Now, I didn't realize this until a few different Bible commentators pointed it out. But do you know that there is only one other place in the entire New Testament where the word charcoal fire is used? It was in John chapter 18, just before the text that we're looking at today. And it happened just a few days earlier before these events. It was when Jesus was taken off into that mockery of a trial, and Peter had followed him into the courtyard of the high priest. We read about this at our Good Friday service Friday night. The servant girl at the door said to Peter, "You also are not one of this man's disciples, are you?" He said, "I am not." Now the servant and officers had made a charcoal fire because it was cold. And they were standing and warming themselves. Peter also was with them, standing and warming himself. Peter was standing there, warming himself by this charcoal fire when he denied Jesus and when the rooster crowed. And Jesus looked straight at Peter, looked straight through his heart. And it was by that charcoal fire that Peter broke down and wept. And now, just a few days later, Jesus builds a charcoal fire. I don't think that that's an accident. Not when Jesus is recreating a scene intentionally in order to reveal himself, especially to Peter. So there's Peter, a broken man, once again in the presence of the Lord, once again realizing that he is a sinner before a holy God. So Jesus has taken him all the way back to that high point of his conversion when he first came to believe in Jesus. And now he takes him all the way back to this low moment, this charcoal fire moment when he denies Jesus. It was the moment of the single greatest failure of Peter's life. Is there a charcoal fire moment in your life? You know, that time when you denied him, when you acted like you didn't even know him. Do you remember a moment like that? Maybe that's where you're living now, living apart from him. And like Peter, you're afraid. And like Peter did the first time that he met Jesus, you want to tell him just to go away from you. I don't want anything to do with you. I just want to be away from you because I'm a sinner. Maybe you've been trying to live away from him and live apart from him, trying to avoid Jesus, avoid places that will have you think about him, trying to just live your life separated from him as much as possible. It's pretty common that we would react that way. But I want to tell you, there is no reason to stay away from Jesus when you have failed him. No reason. In fact, the only place that Peter would find healing for his heart was to bring his failure to Jesus, to re-engage with him. Jesus is the one who said, "Come to me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your soul." So contrary to what we may think, Jesus does not want to crush us for our failures. That's what Peter thought was going to happen. He thought Jesus was going to crush him. But he doesn't do that. At this second charcoal fire moment, rather than crushing him, Jesus reveals his love for Peter. He invites Peter back into a relationship with him. Verse 12, Jesus says to them, "Come have breakfast. Come have breakfast." He cooked fish and bread on that charcoal fire. And verse 13 says, Jesus came and took the bread and gave it to him. And so with the fish. Do you know, it wasn't too long earlier that Jesus had taken just a few fish and a few loaves of bread and he had fed 5,000 people. So you know that these disciples can never again see Jesus handing out fish and breaking bread and handing it out. They can never again see that the same way again. When Jesus took the fish, and when he took the bread, and when he gave it to him, to them, they knew beyond any doubt that it was him. Now, none of the disciples dared ask him, "Who are you?" They knew it was the Lord. It was the risen Lord. Risen bodily, and this is very important in Christianity. The resurrection of Jesus was a bodily resurrection. He wasn't some spirit being. He took bread in his hands, and he ate fish, and he was able to interact bodily with them. And once again, he's enjoying another meal with his disciples. You know, meals are very important in the Bible. A meal was a symbol of fellowship and of relationship. Between now and this summer, we're going to look at some meals with Jesus. Between now and the time that I leave for a sabbatical, we'll be looking at various occasions of meals with Jesus. Starting today with this meal with Peter and the other disciples. But we'll look at his meals with Zacchaeus and Levi the tax collector and Mary and Martha and some Pharisees and a few others. Meals are an invitation into fellowship, into relationship. It's one of the things I love about our Easter breakfast. It's coming together and it's fellowship and relationship, and that's what a family does. In Revelation 20, Jesus says, "Behold, I stand at the door and knock. If anyone hears my voice and opens the door, I will come into him and eat with him, and he with me." That's Jesus. Always ready to fellowship and eat with sinners like us. This is such good news. And this meal in particular was a sweet, sweet time of fellowship. Because the last time Jesus and his disciples had been together for a meal, it was so painful. Do you know what that last meal was that they had together? We talked about it last week. They were having a meal together when Jesus said, "You will weep and lament, and you will be sorrowful." That meal was so difficult. Judas had betrayed Jesus. There was all kinds of confusion. The night ended with Jesus being taken off to trial, which would lead to his crucifixion. It was a very difficult meal. But at that meal, Jesus promised them that they would see him again, that he would rise from the dead, that he would come back to them. And he promises, "Your sorrow..." I lost this here. There you go. "Your sorrow will be turned into joy." That's what we talked about last week. And now at this meal, they are experiencing that. Sorrow turned into joy. Joy of being with the risen Christ. I'm sure it was an incredible time together. They would have laughed. They would have probably laughed a lot. I'm sure they had feelings of overwhelming joy and gratitude and excitement. I'm sure all of them felt like that, but I wonder about Peter. Because I'm not sure it was such a joyful time for Peter. He had been their leader. He had been the leader of the disciples. He had promised never to leave Jesus. Even if the rest of the disciples did, he never would. But he was the one who had denied him. And that just a few days earlier. And just because they're now sitting together, eating fish and eating bread with Jesus, doesn't mean that Peter wasn't experiencing some deep feelings of shame and guilt. No, Peter needed to be restored. And that is exactly what Jesus has been leading up to, this restoring of Peter. That's why Jesus has recreated this whole scene. That's why he met them on the shore and built that charcoal fire. It's all leading to the restoration of Peter. So when the meal was over, Jesus turned his attention to Peter. When they had finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" Now, if you're familiar with this story, it's really easy to skip past something and just focus on this really important question, "Do you love me?" But there's something I want you to see before we get to that question. Did you notice how Jesus addresses Peter here? "Simon, son of John." Simon, son of John? Jesus had changed Peter's name nearly 3 years earlier. "From now on, you will be Peter. You are the rock. I will build my church upon this rock." Jesus hasn't used this name, Simon, son of John, for a long time. This is Peter's name before he got called into ministry. This is his name before he ever met Jesus. Before he had all those experiences with Jesus. Before he was up on that Mount of Transfiguration and saw Jesus in all his glory. This is his name before he walked on water. Before he had a front row seat to witness Jesus walking into a room with just a couple of the disciples and a dead girl laying on a bed and taking her hand and raising her up to life. This is his name before he saw him heal the blind and raise the dead and give hearing back to the deaf. Jesus takes Peter all the way back to who he was before they met, when he was just Simon, son of John. That's who Peter was. Who were you? Who were you when you first met him? When you separate out all the stuff you do just from who you are? I don't know about you, but for me, it's very easy to struggle with getting my identity from what I do. To say, I'm Mike Priest, pastor of Christ Community Church. That's what I do, but that's not who I am. And the problem and the danger is, if I get my identity from what I do, from being pastor of Christ Community Church, then what happens to my identity if people feel, well, he's not doing a very good job as pastor of Christ Community Church? What happens? You know what happens, because it happens to each one of us. If my identity comes from what I do, then it is crushing if I'm not living up to some image of what I think I should be or what others think I should be. It's crushing. And then I have to work harder and harder to prove that I'm worthy, because that's my identity. Do you ever do that? And if you fail at something, it's not just that you failed at this, but no, that must mean I'm a failure. I think this is a struggle that we all can struggle with, getting our identity from our performance. Where do you find your identity? Where do you find your identity? Jesus takes Peter all the way back to the beginning, when he was just Simon, son of John, not Peter the Rock, not the leader of the disciples, no great expectations on him. Who are you? Jesus restores Peter by bringing him back to who he was when they first met. And Jesus only has one question for Peter. That's interesting. That's important. There's just one question. He's revealed himself in this way, very intentionally, reminding him of his whole journey of faith, so he can ask this one question. Do you love me? It's the same question he asked each one of us this morning. Do you love me? Jesus doesn't ask Peter, will you do some great work for me? Will you produce great fruit for me? Those aren't the questions he asks. He simply asks, do you love me? See, whatever else will happen in Peter's life and his ministry will be built on this foundation, a relationship of love, a personal relationship that they have together. And if this foundation isn't in place, then it doesn't really matter what Peter accomplishes for Jesus. Whatever he does for Jesus will be irrelevant if he doesn't first love Jesus. So we are gathered here together this Easter day, this resurrection day. But we need to understand that he didn't rise from the dead so that he could have a bunch of servants running around doing his bidding. He loves you. He loves you deeply. And he has gone to extravagant means in order to show his love to you. And he just asked Peter to affirm his love in return. I hope you let this simple question capture your heart. His question is simply, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Three times Jesus asks, and three times Peter answers, yes, Lord, you know that I love you. And then three times Jesus says, feed my lambs. The order here is really, really important. We tend to think in the language of earning somebody's love, earning somebody's favor. We think, if I work for him, if I feed his lambs, then he will love me. Then I will be worthy. But that's not how unconditional love works. Jesus doesn't say, if you want me to love you, then you need to feed my lambs. You need to produce something for me. Then I will love you. He starts with love. I love you. Do you love me? That's all I want to know. Three times, Peter had denied Jesus. So three times, Jesus asked him to affirm his love. He said to him the third time, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, do you love me? And he said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. See, Peter is grieved that Jesus has to ask him three times. He's grieved that Jesus has stripped away his resume, stripped away his name, taken him all the way back to the beginning. But he needs to go all the way back to the beginning. All the way back to Simon, son of John. Do you love me? We could ask similar questions. Greg, son of Ron, do you love him? Tim, son of Art, do you love him? Leslie, daughter of Helen, do you love him? Becky, daughter of Renee, do you love him? Put your own name in there. Do you love him? Now, before you answer that question too quickly, you need to understand that loving Jesus means following Jesus. It means living for him and no longer for yourself. And you need to know that it isn't easy. It isn't an easy path that he calls us to. In fact, it's so difficult that most people choose not to do it. Choose not to follow him. In the end, most people just simply love themselves more than they love Him. And life is about me instead of about Him, and it's about my will instead of His will. So you have to think about that as you decide if you love Him. Because if it's about you instead of Him, and if church is about getting what you want instead of what He wants, following Him is going to be very difficult. So these next verses are very challenging. Because what Jesus says here, because of these words, you will not be able to walk away today and tell somebody, "Oh, there was a really sweet sermon for Easter this morning." Because this isn't a really sweet sermon. Jesus isn't giving a sweet, feel-good message. That's not what He did for Peter, and it's not what He does for us. What He's doing here is He is putting a fork in the road. So if you've been flirting with following Jesus, it's time to get off of the fence, one way or the other. Either follow Him or don't follow Him. At one point in the book of Revelation, He tells people, "I wish you were either hot or cold." Not lukewarm. Hot or cold. Follow me or don't follow me. Get off the fence. He tells Peter, "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted. But when you are old, you will stretch out your hands, and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." This he said to show what kind of death he was to glorify God. Peter would die as a martyr. Now, Jesus may not be calling you to martyrdom, but He will call you to go where you don't want to go, to serve where you don't want to serve, to put His will above your will. But once you settle the "do you love me" question, you truly will be ready to follow wherever He leads you. Because He'll be with you. And after saying this, He said to him, "Follow me." Again, Jesus is bringing Peter all the way back to the beginning. Back to when they first met. Back to the time when He first called Peter to be His disciple. To the time 3 years earlier when He simply said, "Follow me." Now again He says it, "Follow me." So Jesus is calling you to two very simple things. To love Him and to follow Him. Maybe He's bringing you back to that time when you first met Him, when you first loved Him, when you first decided to follow Him, back to your first love, back even through your own failures, your own charcoal fire moments. Hear Him ask you that simple question, "Do you love me? Do you love me?" That's the only question that matters. Everything else follows from there. Do you love me? Then follow Him as a response to His love. Let's pray together. Lord Jesus, thank you for loving us, for dying on the cross, but then rising from the dead. And for the incredible lengths that you have gone to in order to restore us to you. Help us to see today how much we are loved. Help us to see you, our risen Lord, calling us back to you, asking us to follow you, not to earn your favor, not to earn your love, but because we are loved. Help us, for some of us, Lord, to go all the way back to that very simple time when we just knew that you loved us and we were growing in love with you as well. Help us to love you. In the name of our risen Lord, we pray. Amen.